Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Patrick Connor. Patrick is an extraordinary teacher and transmission of awakening to a life of exuberant joy. And I've had the good fortune of attending some of his retreats, and they've been profound and deep experiences. And what I really appreciate about Patrick is that inside of his core message that life is a vibrational game, he points to two key pillars of the work. The one of connecting our life force directly with life itself via a multidimensional process of initiation and activation. And the other pillar, the need for us to work with our subconscious programming to release the subconscious blocks to living a life of joy. And this is what we're going to be exploring today in our conversation. A few more words about Patrick. For two decades, he's been leading seminars and workshops and retreats across the globe. He's worked closely with CEOs and presidents of large corporations, philanthropists, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, high-level political leaders from all around the world, and those ready to transform themselves into sources of inspiration and innovation for the world around them. And his life has been guided by the questions such as, what does it mean to really use a human lifetime most powerfully? And what have the most evolved beings of all cultures and ages known or understood within themselves? So this journey has taken him all around the world, including to places like the south of India, where he's engaged in multi-year collaborations and learning from advanced adepts in those places, such as the Siddhas of South India. So we are in very capable hands today. Let's dive right in. Here's the podcast with Patrick Connor. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey. So I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. So Patrick, it's already a true delight to be with you, and we haven't really started speaking much yet. How are you doing today?
Yes, wonderfully well. Thank you. Really a joy to be here with you.
Yeah. Actually, I wondered if you could just say a few words about who you are and what you're up to in the world. I mean, I know you could speak a long time about that. So, and yeah. I've got plenty of questions, but, you know, just to give the listeners a sense of, yeah.
Yeah, so let me start in this spontaneous way we are sharing, just to say that since very, very young, I've had the strong feeling of wanting to make the most of this life, and a burning fire in my gut with the deep question of, you know, what of the most accomplished humans who've ever walked the earth, what have they known? What of the wisest humans who've ever lived? What have they discovered? What have they traversed? How have they done it? What have they known? What have, you know, and what does it mean to live a really fulfilled life and to be inspired here and to make the most of this adventure, really to make the most of it, to live as joyfully, as magnificently, as intrepidly, as courageously, as inspirationally as possible. So I'm going to be somewhat brief, dear brother, because you know, I want to leave space for you to jump in and move wherever you feel guided. But yeah, so I grew up in England. I had the privilege of going to some wonderful educational institutions, and I found that the mainstream educational world doesn't really teach much about those kinds of questions about how to make the most of our life, and particularly, So I was when I left a postgraduate at university, and I have a bio on my website, so I'm not going to try to recapitulate that. I went into business, and with the intention of, I guess I had in my heart since the very beginning to want to be of service to life, and for this life to be of benefit to my fellow beings while I'm here. And so I originally imagined that my dharma might be to make a few billion dollars and then reevaluate, you know, where to distribute that wealth and how to, you know, proceed with that kind of life of service and contribution. And at some point it became quite clear to me, and I was, you know, I went into business, I went to live in Asia, I was an entrepreneur, I started a technology company, and it was an absolutely brilliant experience, and I'm enormously grateful for having had such a deep experience at the forefront of the forefront of the world culture. At some point it came very clear to me that this burning fire in my gut wasn't being answered by that particular trajectory, and I left my business to my partners, and I went on my way to find what this calling was asking of me. And what came strongly was I began to throw myself into the adventure of my own expansion of consciousness, and very early in my journey it became quite clear to me that the wisest humans in every culture, in every age, are singing a tune that has remarkable coherence. And you know, it was clear to me that the philosophers are in violent disagreement with each other, and endless debate. Even the scientists, those focused on the discoveries of reality through reality, in air quotes, through the medium of the physical sciences, are also continually upgrading and updating their discovery and changing and transforming their discoveries about reality, and saying, well, actually, guys, what we told you 20 years ago, last century, isn't actually quite the way things work. Here's a more refined understanding that may, in fact, even be quite different. And that's to say nothing of the believers, the people of faith, the religious communities who've been killing each other and waging war with each other across history, and nothing needs to be said about that. So, and from out of the pages and the storybooks, and the places of across this earth where the wise ones have lived and evolved, the same song emerges, that it's possible to find one's own essential essence, that this discovery leads to a kind of freedom and aliveness and joy that normal humans living in conventional ways generally don't uncover or unfold or discover, that one can live in rapport with, in harmony with, in communion with this field of unity that the quantum physicists have now discovered with irrefutable clarity, in a way, that there's a unified field, that is the basis of existence, that is, that the quantum level of reality is essentially a unity. But to discover this unity in a way can't be can't be done objectively, because this unity is the reality, and therefore it's essentially subjective. And so the only way to unfold the promise of unity and the promise of all that the consciousness of unity and inspiration and real love and real joy and real freedom brings is to unfold that within oneself. And so it came to me very early in my journey that, well, let me say that the first 7 years of my life, I had the experience of everything being light. So the first 7 years there was a knowing, a constant knowing, that the basis of reality is light. All humans are made of light. The earth is made of light. The substance of reality is light. Everything is light. And that's what the baseline of existence is. One morning in my family home, in my kitchen, age 7, the dimmer switch turned down, and I was being called to live in a more normal kind of way and in a young boy's life in England. That said, as soon as I threw myself into this quest, my own kind of hero's journey, and more to say about that perhaps, the light came straight back. And I began to explore all kinds of healing methods and all kinds of ways to awaken energy and consciousness and light. I tried, and every one of the healing methods and directions I went in triggered a kind of remembering from multiple lives of what those methods were and what that healing energy is and how to in a way be an instrument of that. And so in a way because I was able to traverse that terrain unexpectedly quickly, it led me quite directly to seeing that the basis of everything is consciousness, and the potential to live a wonderful life and make the most of this life is essentially the degree to which we are willing to transform and awaken vibrationally within us that unity, this light, this love, this grace, this inspiration. And so what then began was a multi-year track of exploration, including going back to India where I had lived, meeting many teachers, some of them in the remote parts of the Himalayas and mountains and in North India. I traveled very widely, read everything I could get my hands on, and I never planned to be a teacher ever. It was never in my thinking. It was all my intention was just to get to the bottom of what this game is about for myself and to unwind my own blocks and veils and unconscious beliefs and dogmas, if you like, that I was holding without knowing, and veils over the light of reality. And in a sense, I could say I was more interested in discovering what's possible than in becoming spiritual, and I very, very much didn't want to become caught up in some particular method, some particular technique, some particular community that would bind me to, you could say, a many decade process of not really understanding this on a universal level, but hoping that if I meditate enough in a particular way that everything is going to unfold. And so my quest was really one of what are the universal themes that all of the most accomplished humans who have evolved, what really works, what is universal and timeless, and to leave the rest behind. So I spent a lot of time in India. I spent a little time in the caves of the Himalayas just to get that out of my system. I had a very strong sense that my calling in this life was not to be a renunciate or be a cave yogi or withdrawn from the world. That said, I was ready for that. You know, if any one of these masters and yogis in the remote parts of the Himalayas had said to me, Patrick, lock yourself in a tapas kutir, as they call it in India, and sit, meditating and staring at the third eye for the next 5 years. They wouldn't have got to the end of the sentence before I would have been packing my bags, super up for it. My prayer was like, I'm ready to do anything, literally anything, to discover what's possible. Anything means anything with a capital A, point size 8 million. I found myself early on in my journey being invited to share my experiences because things were expanding and evolving, and I was finding so many ways to heal myself of my conditioning and open myself to more and more light and joy and inspiration. And so I found this great love of walking with others, and it was a very immediate. I was always the one as a young man. Giving my friends advice on their relationships, you know, saying like, no, drop all the techniques, you know, be authentic and be real and just trust that and see what unfolds. And so that matured into, so I was always very psychic, so I could read people's unconscious mind like a book, really, from the beginning of this life, and I thought everyone could. But then when I really began to understand the dynamics of the process of illumination itself on a universal level, putting those two together, I began to be able to like help others, walk with others, and just to be able to say, you know, where in the ecosystem of a person's consciousness can you place the least amount of intentional focus to open up the gates of light and joy and inspiration and freedom, for the unwinding of what blocks you and is in your way from living joyfully and inspirationally. And it's like finding the combination lock to their soul's expansion in this moment, in this moment, in this moment. The combination lock to a lot more joy, a lot more freedom from difficulties and fear, a lot more inspiration. So, and that remains mind-blowingly fascinating to me, and my work with others is just love. It's just pure joy, and it never gets old. It's not work. It's like I gave up work 25 years ago, and then about quite a few years ago now, I came across the Siddhas of South India, the Tamil Siddhas, in my wanderings in India, and I'd already been teaching for quite a few years, leading retreats, working one-on-one with philanthropists, entrepreneurs, young mothers, very spiritually committed souls, and others. And in the meeting with the Siddhas of South India, I found a missing key, you could say, that was really the... I'd read about the Siddhas, the adepts, the yogic masters of South India. There's very little written about them. And they were written about in a language that implies that they're not really around in modern times. I knew that wasn't true. Their great achievement is to have really mastered the process of alchemy, the true alchemy, which involves the descent of the light of reality, the light of consciousness into the body, and to be able to live from the light here in the body on the earth. And so the last thing I'm going to say is what I discovered in all of my wanderings, meeting so many teachers, and most of all in living at the frontier of my own expansion of consciousness and having this as the laboratory for the discovery of the rest of it, and as my own priority, what I discovered is that there are these two rather uncomfortable processes, uncomfortable by virtue of being in the conventional culture disassociated one from the other. And those two processes are as follows. The first is an ascending process, which is essentially an evolutionary unfoldment that maps to what they call in the East the Kundalini, or the evolutionary energy, which essentially when a soul, when a person becomes dedicated and excited and devoted to discovery of truth, the energetics of that in the etheric body start to move, and the Kundalini rises, and there's a process of breaking in through pathways. There's many Sanskrit names for them: pathways, granthis, chakras, to reveal more and more rarefied vantage points of seeing and experiencing life and existence. And from those rarefied vantage points, there's more and more joy and more freedom. However, that process is essentially on its own disassociative from the human and what we could call the practical. And so what I found is that the mainstream spiritual direction, if you like, is to go upwards, to ascend, and that opening that ascension process, as important as it is to become aware of and commune with and soak in the nature of reality as light, as presence, as grace, as God, as Shiva, as the unified field, as the great spirit, give it whatever, as the Tao, give it any name you like, the idea is that if you could soak in this long enough or constantly enough, that all of the conditioning in the consciousness held in the unconscious will gradually dissolve and fall away. And I found that isn't so. And part of it is, I guess you would say, is being in, initially I'd say in such an intense focus to get to it as directly as possible. And so I found that process is super slow, super inefficient, and that it's not essentially oriented towards being joyful and masterful and adept here in the world. That one of the essential perspectives of the ascending path is that, and I'm speaking in the most committed kinds of traditions and teachings, is that that the world's an illusion, and the big purpose is to get beyond it. And so the paradigm of transcendence dominates in that process. And the very idea, even the word spirituality, implies an turning one's attention and being interested in the spirit as the primary arena of engagement, and that the spirit is somehow somewhere other than our human daily practical life. So then you have all the conditioning, the psychological conditioning, what they call in the West the shadow work. And I found that to do that work, the kind of frontier of development in that field is a brilliant panorama of innovation and exploration and ongoing methodology development, mostly Western since Freud and Jung. But that much of that is unfolding inside a paradigm of duality, inside a paradigm of separation. And I found that most of the most deep kinds of conditioning, the most deep kinds of belief systems, the most deep kinds of dynamics of scarcity, lack, fear, and separation, they are multi-lifetime, pre-verbal, and unconscious. And you just can't get to them. You can't unwind them from the vibration of separation, because it's like trying to pull the rug from under your own feet. And so this alchemy I'm speaking of became, it's like all the lights went on, and I began to see how to meet the conditioning from the light. So it's not to try to undo the conditioning in the fiefdom of the conditioning inside the paradigm of separation, where there's a glass ceiling to what you can unwind and what you can even see, and not trying to rely on just going to the light and hoping that that'll take care of the human levels of my life. So I had the perspective all along that in a way, the final frontier of possibility, at least in this life while we're here in a human body in this world, is to live as joyfully, as inspirationally, as creatively, and with as much freedom as is possible here. And so, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. And I resonate deeply with what you're talking about. And there's so much in what you shared that I could ask about. I'm sure we'll get into all kinds of questions. But the first thing I'd love to ask is about that process of meeting our conditioning, you know, that multi-lifetime pre-verbal conditioning from the light. Like, is that, could you talk about that in more detail? And is that something that you've learned how to do with others, and it's a highly refined, you know, energetic art? Or is it something we can learn to do ourselves? But what is that process? Yeah,
brother, thank you for such a deep question. So in a way, it's not, I mean, we can speak about it as a process, because we're speaking about a dynamic, an alchemical dynamic by which we transform our own consciousness from the intelligence of the light. So we could use the word process, but in a way, the language breaks down in its complete application, because what we're really referring to is a way of seeing. An atmosphere, a context. And so I've had the privilege of working with yogis, yoginis, spiritual teachers, guides, mentors, and philanthropists, entrepreneurs, leaders, and people who want to make the most of their lives and are moved to make a difference here, and people who have the hunger to develop themselves, you could say, as much as is conceivably possible. What I found myself sharing over and over is how important it is to, in a way, to de-emphasize method and technique and process, and to bring the attention to the context in which we're pursuing our adventure. And so for one person, for example, they are working in some, they're trying to evolve themselves in a paradigm of getting rid of the ego, let's call it in a spiritual term, or in a more human leadership context that seems more practical, getting rid of the fear, getting rid of the conditioning, getting rid of the division, getting rid of the inner conflict, and trying to apply methods and practices to that. Rather than understanding that this whole game, the quantum reality is vibrational. And so the atmosphere in which we approach our process is every bit as important as the techniques, methods, and processes that we bring to bear on it. So I'll give you a simple example. If you approach, like many people in the West, for example, think of just to think about the transformation of consciousness as spiritual already implies it's something outside of the mainstream world of the things that most matter to you in your human life and are of the most practical consequence to your daily life. It implies a realm of private belief and something you do with your eyes closed and legs crossed in what they call meditation. And like, so there's already the split there between the spiritual and the human, the transcendent and the immanent, the divine and the practical. Or maybe we start to look at our human challenges and we say, well, you know, we look at them in a problem-solving paradigm. And so it's not obvious that spirituality or that consciousness really has much to do with that. It looks like if we apply ourselves with dedication to our human challenges, we'll be most focused and most able to deal with those, and that would be the most practical. And if we're trying to get rid of those things, that seems to be an anticipating future problems to preemptively get rid of, that would be the most practical way to be with those questions. And that way of seeing doesn't seem to have anything to do with this rather esoteric, abstract kind of thing about connecting to God. Whereas, you know, if you collapse all those viewpoints and all that atmospheric in a way, dogma. And you say, I just want to be in sync with reality. I want to be like that. There can't be anything more practical than what works, than putting your energy in a direction that bears like fruit with reliability. And so what I began to see is that the quantum reality of life is vibrational, meaning that whatever vibration you want to be in experiencing, you first have to awaken that vibration here. So I often ask people two questions who come to me. The first question is, tell me your most exalted dream. Tell me your most uplifting, joyful, don't spare the horses, crazy, unlimited, free dream of what you could become and what you could create and what you could live in this lifetime. And include even those things that your school teacher or your mother or whoever told you that you'll never amount to or will never be possible for you or you don't have the right background for or who knows. Include all that, like the unedited dream. And let me show you all the vibrations you're holding in your unconscious mind, which are not yet a match to that unfolding. And the process is one of like, so with guidance, and by the way, none of the wise humans who've ever walked the earth have come home to themselves without guidance. Often a good part of that guidance is guidance in meditation or guidance directly from the source within. And almost always those beings have had human guides, beings who are instruments of this source intelligence that have opened their intuitive seeing faculty powerfully enough to be able to look into your own subconscious mind more powerfully than you can at this moment and see where you're in your own way. But imagine you undo those vibrations that are not in harmony with your biggest dream and reprogram the unconscious to be in harmony with your biggest dream. The second question would be, what's triggering, what's difficult, what's challenging, what brings you anxiety, what triggers you into fear, what patterns of limitation and lack and dysfunction emerge for you in your relational life, in your money life, in your health, in your professional life, in everything to do with what you want to bring forth in the world. And let me show you in a meticulous, detailed way that show you in a way that you can't miss what vibrations you're holding within you that are an exact match to holding those experiences and those ongoing limitations in place. And the process is one of, you could say there are two essential pillars of the process. One is opening oneself to light, to consciousness, to God, to grace, to the power of the universal intelligence. And that's a process that you could say requires, I use the word devotion. And devotion, I don't mean it becoming a bhakta as in an Indian devotee. It doesn't mean being a devotee of any system, of any other human, or of any religion, or of any cult, or even of any deity. It's as powerful and beautiful as all that may be. It's a simpler thing. It's more universal thing. It's cultivating a spirit of wonder, a deep openness, a willingness to be guided, meaning to be shown what I am not seeing yet, either by another human who can see more clearly than I can. And you see, like, there's a tremendous fear in the Western culture that comes from a long history that went through the Middle Ages and the abuse of the church power and then the birth of science that massively corrected for that. And we're living in the result of those times in a way, or at least the momentum of all that transformation and historically. And so one thing is to say, well, I'm going to have a teacher and I'm just going to believe what they say. But if the teacher is saying, instead of a teacher saying, you know, just believe me, Have faith in me. If the teacher is saying you need to believe in yourself and have faith in yourself, and but not just faith and belief, let me show you precisely where you're in your own way. So you don't need to really have much faith in me. You just need to be willing to look. It's more align yourself with being open to discovery. Take the adventure. Make yourself miracle ready. Make yourself ready for adventure and discovery and massive revelation. And now let me show you what you're holding precisely that is a match to what you're wanting to transform. And it's like saying, can you see you're wearing black socks? And you look down at your feet and go, oh my God, I'm wearing black socks. So then there's no more faith required. It's absolutely clear. And there's revelation in that. And so the process is one of, the first pillar is opening oneself to guidance. And the essential basis of my work is to really lay out the fundamental principles that I've observed, that are universal principles of the process of expansion of consciousness and illumination. And it's not to present, you know, Patrick's path or the new bujubu way. You know, it's to say these are fundamental principles that empower any process. Stay with your tradition. Remain a Buddhist, remain a Hindu, remain a Sufi, remain a mystic of this path or that path. Keep your own flavor of pursuing illumination and wisdom and clarity and life mastery. Don't have to throw any of it away. And here's some of the firepower, some of the essential elements that if you apply to your process will make your tradition come alive even more powerfully. And so that's the first pillar. And the second pillar is look deeply at the conditioning and allow it to be unwound. And there's a lot more to say in all of that, a part of the work that I'm called to do is to be an instrument of what we might call initiation, which is to support those who are ready to unwind blocks and veils in their process and to activate and open the etheric body in ways that they're ready for. And I would say to you that no mind can do this. So this isn't, there's no such thing as in this way as a person having any power. The power is all in the field, in the field of consciousness. The power is all in the light. Our work as teachers is to empty ourselves to be instruments of this light and to, in a way, hold our heart in devotion and the privilege of walking with our brothers and sisters and to serve their unfoldment and to lay all the glory of that grace in the intelligence of the source. And any being, anyone who's ever stood in the majesty and magnificence of the light of the source in that moment cannot be confused to imagine that any person has the power of that. The person is the power possesses you and not the other way around. And so it's an unbelievable privilege to work with that grace and that light and that love. In a way, our work as teachers is to open ourselves to this and to live in the joy and grace of that privilege and that integrity.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it. I love that you talk about not just the ascending path, because it just seems like in our times more and more people are drawn to what is it to live an exuberantly joyful or awake human life as well. We're in service of the world, and I found myself, especially since we met, devotion being incredibly important, just praying or speaking out, asking for guidance, for support, and from that place in my heart. And I will come back to like the kind of the work that you do with people, but I first want to ask, are these principles? Like, how could people start to orient? Because I think a lot of people now don't feel joy. They feel struggle with life. And I appreciate the way you say it's like it's a way of seeing or an atmosphere, because that to me gets us out of maybe even the way we might try and solve this question of like, what do I do? Because I suddenly start trying to fix myself and I see everything as a problem, which is kind of perpetuating the very issue. So I love that you talk about that. I'm just curious for you, like what are these principles and how could people start to kind of engage in this path and be more joyful?
Thank you, dear brother. So, as all great wisdom traditions have asserted or reflected at some point somewhere in the great literature, the any path of that's really true is filled with paradox. Yeah, and so one of the ways in which paradox moves in all of this is that principles, universal principles, the best way to bring forth or communicate universal principles is not a descriptive list of universal principles, as useful and appealing as that maybe might be. And because the whole game is to get it in your bones, like in your being, rather than in your head. There's a wonderful saying that I often repeat because it touched me so deeply when I first read it many years ago. And it's a saying in French from The Little Prince, where the little prince is saying, I'll say the French because it's so beautiful. Voici mon secret, il est très simple. On ne voit bien qu'avec le cœur. L'essentiel est invisible pour les yeux, which means, here is my secret. It's terribly simple. One cannot see clearly except with the heart. The essence of all things is invisible to the eye, which also means invisible to the mind, to the thinking mind. And so, in order to ensure this is not merely a conceptual journey, but a vibrational adventure, because, do you see, you will live what you are holding vibrationally, not what you know in your head. That's what everyone is. So whatever you know in your head, if it's not matched by what you're holding in your body vibrationally, that's the vibrational totality of what you're holding is what you will experience. And so the game is to, one very important aspect of the process of seeing is the illumination of the intuition. So the best way to transmit the direct knowing of these kind of of these universal principles is not a list of such principles, but more like a soaking in a field, a soaking in a vibrational field that it's alive with these principles, and that's part of what we're pointing to by the term atmosphere. So one of the principal ways that I have of inviting people into that is a retreat process, whereby, which I know you, which it's very joyfully shared a little bit with you, and that is an invitation to soak in a field and to soak in such a field with fellow inspired humans, and in this field to deepen in our own atmosphere of alignment with, let's call it, the magic, and the more aligned we become with light or consciousness or the magic, I like to call it the miracle field, the more from this vantage point we get to see what we've been holding that is not true and not needed anymore and not valid and can be just washed away and allowed to gently transmute itself into this field. And we don't get rid of anything. We embrace it and allow it to transmute. So all of the, there's so many things to say, but one of the big revelations that that the soul, that the being gets at some point in their journey, is that there really isn't this thing called light and dark. There really isn't good and bad, or certainly not good and evil. That actually everything that we'd say is the opposite of love, joy, inspiration, light, is really made of the substance of light, just like twisted to look like something else, because the mind is a creative instrument and can twist the substance of consciousness into appearing as the vibration of something else. And so we don't actually get rid of darkness, because to believe in darkness is to actually create the illusion of darkness and to become polarized inside ourselves. So the more you run away from fear, the more fear seems to chase you, because it's actually all based in unity, because the substance of reality is light. Therefore, so the transmission of that and the soaking in that reveals a kind of joy of discovering that the things that you would most want to get rid of, they only need to be embraced. And that sounds simple verbally, but the soaking in it in a field that knows that experientially is another thing. And then you start to be able to meet fears within you that you've been protecting or quarantining inside your consciousness, and they start to melt. And you're like, wow, how could it be so simple? But in a way, it's not simple. It's not trivial, and it's not simplistic. So I like to say that when you really completely, vibrationally, energetically embrace the darkness untwists itself into light. When you really, really completely embrace the light gets stronger. When you really, really, really completely embrace the non-love transforms into love. When you really, really, really completely embrace the love gets stronger. You tell me what's real. Do you see? So the discovery that we're speaking about is a vibrational discovery that comes from a soaking and from an initiatory process. And not from a passing over of information to the mental level or to the intellect to store in a library of knowledge within oneself.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. And I love that you share that. I wonder if you think this is I know your retreats and the online sessions you do are an initiation process, and do you feel that maybe there's even a collective initiation taking place on the earth? Maybe it's a difficult question to answer, but what I do see emerging is a big swell of interest in practices and approaches. This podcast, a lot of coaches and facilitators listen to it. And in the field of coaching and facilitating, there's been a big embrace of almost like dropping the game of trying to create change, and actually embracing what's here on the level of, I wouldn't have used the word frequency, but, felt sense, and really refining that capacity. And from there, integration takes place and unfolding takes place. And so I'm just curious, if this is a practice that people can also engage in at home, or by themselves. And if you do see it kind of taking root more.
Yeah, thank you. So I would say for sure this is a profound time on the earth of initiation. And in one sense, all of us here are taking our initiation in love and in what's possible in a human body, in a human life. And so challenging times challenge us to be at our best and to find what triggers us and to transform what triggers us in order to be able to be here in these difficult, challenging, confusing times more joyfully and more inspirationally. I often like to say anyone can be peaceful when everything is going their way. You really discover where you're at when things come up to trigger you. And those are the doorways to healing and transformation, and that's a, in a way, a collapsing of the split perspective, which means the imagined split between the spiritual and the material, between the divine and the human, let's say, that in the collapsing of that split, we begin to look at the world as our human life, as our relational world, as the theater of our illumination, no longer as a world of bothering things that either it's an unsafe, dangerous world that we would rather not have to participate in, or a relationally toxic world that we would rather not have to participate in and keep quarantined in a somewhat more sanitized spiritual environment. We actually begin to see that those arenas that we consider to be difficult or the most challenging, that they are whatever challenges us individually is a mirror to where our doorways to the light are. I like to say that there are two gates to the light. Of course, one is here, meaning you open more and more capacity as you, in a way, go upwards, as you ascend, as you literally break through the etheric barriers above, to opening to more of source energy, more of the light, more of grace, let's call it. But the rest of the light, And so much of the juiciness of the light is down here. You see, it's in the transforming of the heaviest conditioning, the most buried stuff, the material that we've most disowned, the things we've most numbed ourselves from having to deal with or face, that is containing the seed of the remaining light and the remaining joy and the remaining vibration of, you could say, light that leads to unity and a sense of freedom. And so we begin to not be opposed to the world in that way, and to see that life is always partnering us in our adventure of illumination, and seeing this game as a game and as an adventure is a totally different thing than seeing it in a problem-solving context. It's a game, and it can be an unbelievably inspirational game. And as we begin to understand, in a way, some of the rules of the game and how to meet fear and how to meet those challenges in a practical way, things transform, and you begin to go, this is fun. You begin to understand, wow, complete non-resistance looks like a passive spiritual idea, but when you learn to practice it through your body in a really, really comprehensive way, magic things happen around you. And things that, you know, that there's an old saying that says, when you're completely ready to face the lion on your path, very often you don't have to. Or something changes and it goes away by itself. Do you see? So there are principles that we share that by living them and by soaking in a field of unwinding our own conditioning, that you could say is its own initiation. In daily life is a process of initiation if we're up for the game and if we're up for the challenge. And maybe I'd say one other thing about initiation. There's another dimension of it, you could say, which is, you could say, directly from the light, directly from source energy through your own meditation, that you get activated in ways that are new and wonderful when you're ready. And all of the power and all of the sovereignty to receive that activation from the source is with one's own willingness. And so a huge part of my work is inviting those who are up for it to orient towards the universal intelligence, towards the life intelligence, the power of existence, in such a manner that begets massive assistance and massive revelation and rapid inspirational unfoldment, and makes it joyful and fun rather than a hard slog and a problem-solving gig. And so, in addition to that, part of the Dharma here is to be an instrument of, you could say, that kind of very precise process of activation, whereby so that the mind here is silent. None of the teaching work or the retreat process has a curriculum. There's no curriculum whatsoever. Every day is like it's emergent. Every session, every moment is emergent. That way, the process of that, you could say, attunement or devotion, is to be empty to that intelligence moving through the field, and that way, the field, the intelligence of the field itself, meets those who arrive at the point of their own unfoldment, at the edge of their own expansion and possibility. And so many activations happen in retreat, and that are profound changes in the etheric body, and literally the etheric body, the energy body of the system of the human system. It's unbelievably sophisticated. Its potential is literally unlimited, and changes and activations in the etheric body bring online immediately possibilities. It's literally changing the apparatus of consciousness itself. The very apparatus with which you see and move through life is changing. And so it's unbelievably important and powerful and catalytic, and like it's game changing, because it changes the apparatus right then and there in some direction that brings more possibility, more ability to hold more light, more expansion, more clear seeing, more into intuitive illumination, etc. But the power that's activating that initiatory process is oneself, is one's own readiness. So no, in a field of 50 people or 500 people gathered in a field of initiation, they're all receiving what they're ready for. And so a big part of our work as teachers is to share and model the process of being in relationship to the light, to live, first of all, live at our own edge of possibility, and remove the glass ceiling of the idea that there's an endpoint or a final point of arrival. You know, I like to say, you know, the archangels are works in progress. We for sure are. And then to I mean, I call it the spirit of devotion, but there's so much to say about it. To keep ourselves open and to live in the wow, you know, to live in the wonder of all this. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then to live in the excitement, in a way, and the fascination of this game. And as a game and as an adventure, it's super fun. And it doesn't mean there aren't challenges and times you have to dig very, very deep. But digging very deep and learning how to get stronger here is a way more inspirational, compass bearing and process than looking at the world as dangerous and seeking protection.
Hell yes to that. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think, I mean, I'm getting a sense then it's almost like people need like the, you know, coming to a retreat, getting the initiations, almost like getting that fire burning more and more, the light kind of radiating, and you know, maybe they go back home to their lives and you know, there's certain things that have gone, but they're kind of, you know, maybe getting back more into the struggle, and then they come back on retreat again, and there's a chance to plug back in, and maybe at some point they can self-generate that process more. Like, I don't know if that's the wrong way to look at it, but yeah.
So for sure, I would say that the purpose of any teaching process is to empower and support sovereign self-empowerment in all of us as brothers and sisters. And so, of course, there's a powerful experience to soak in a field that feels wonderful. And that's very facilitative of being able to unwind things that might be more difficult to unwind sitting at home by oneself. But in the unwinding of what it of blocks, fails, obstacles and resistances in the unconscious, blocks to the light, blocks to the illumination of the intuition, let's say, there's permanent changes to the apparatus, yeah, of consciousness. Therefore, there are permanent shifts that one takes back into one's life. And so, of course, the purpose of the teaching process through initiation is that it's to make permanent change. But it's also to model in a way that isn't a linear communication of verbal principles, to model the gestalt of this process, this cycle of illumination, where we open ourselves through intention to light and allow the surfacing of old material that has been a veil and has been a vibrational field, manifesting some of what's difficult and challenging, and allowing that to melt in the light and in our ever-expanding consciousness, and to receive initiation, to activate more capacity, and then with that greater capacity to see our own veils more clearly, and to be able to then surface those just by seeing them and have them melt in the light and receive more initiation. And it's a cyclical process that has kind of universal truth to it, meaning it's not a method, it's not anyone's method. There are universal principles to the way in which we open to more light, and the power of that light automatically pulls up from our own unconscious heavier material that we didn't have the firepower internally to transform before then, and it gets to transmute and heal, and we work through it, and then we open to more light. And so this isn't any one tradition or any one person's method. These are some of the universal principles that we begin to discover in a dynamic way, rather than a static list of things our mind knows. We discover the principles as a way of relating to the unfoldment itself, and we become able to have our own vibrational expansion and transformation as the context, as the container of our lives. So we no longer are splitting our spiritual life, our relational life, our professional life. You know, there's no area of our human life, no area, and there's no role that we could be in any area of life which is not electrifyingly upgraded by the presence of more joy, more love, more intuitive insight, more clear seeing, more inspiration. So we start to be able to heal that split, and so the more we embrace the game as a game, but as an adventure and as a journey, not merely like at some point we have to grow out of any kind of learning process like this as thinking of it as a problem-solving thing we go to when things are difficult, but then we go back to sleep and think that there's a practical world that we're being practical about that doesn't include the understanding that all of life is vibration. You know, that's the hard way. So the game is to, in a way, as we evolve, let me say it that way, because there isn't really any wrong in it. As we evolve, we begin to understand in our bones that this whole game is vibrational, and that there's no question, however practical, that doesn't have that context to it. And let me say it in a really practical way. People have asked me, well, but what about taking action? This whole vibrational thing is great, but what about, you know, being active and taking action in the world? And I say, well, they're really one thing. Even if you don't know they're one thing, they're one thing. When you're in fear and anxiety about something, that vibration becomes the sponsoring seed of any action you take from that vibration. Literally, when you're in fear and you then scramble to take action from that fear, that vibration of that fear becomes the sponsoring seed of the action that you're taking. And the action will inevitably then lead to some kind of set of circumstances and experiences that will be a vibrational match to the fear. Acting from the fear will generate more to be afraid about in that same precise way. The same is the true of when you move from joy, let's say, as a contrast, and flow. There's a the action will emerge it to be of the same vibrational quality as the joy. The action will lead to more to be joyful about. And so you could say the mind that has vibration and act, that doesn't understand vibration and that has vibration and action split, says this vibrational thing sounds all a bit esoteric and abstract and weird and spiritual. I want to live practically, you know, what to do about this. But reality, I like to joke with friends over the years. I say I'm actually not that interested in spirituality, to be honest, but I'm an absolute lover of reality. I'm fascinated by reality. Mm. So you get really interested in reality, you go, the quantum field is a vibrational field. That's the real. So, and there's nothing more practical than being in sync with reality. So when you're in the what to do question and you're asking from fear, the mind in that vibration of fear is in a sense blocked to the revelation. And so the game is to ascend a vibrational ladder first and to in a way leave the what to do question until you can look at the problem from a different vibration. And so learning how to transform your vibration is the game of mastery. It's the most practical thing there is in terms of action.
Yeah, gotcha. And so from fear, you might want to, first, instead of acting from that, embrace the fear, or, you know, accept that it's here. You know, I'm curious, in a sense, like I'm asking, like, what would move you up that ladder? You know, like, yeah. Process.
Well, yeah. So I'll give you an example. I was speaking to someone the other day, and they were telling me that they'd go home, and this person's is a guide and a mentor and a evolved human and very deep and bright. She was telling me she goes home, and there's this noise. She lives in this wonderful place in the countryside, and there's this noise that really, really bothers me. And it kind of bothers my nervous system, and I've tried everything. I've tried trying to get rid of it. I've tried speaking to the neighbors. I've tried playing music. I've tried drowning it out. It really bothers me. And I my nervous it hits my nervous system. We talked, and I said to this person, you know, what if all sounds are part of the universal reality, and that in the light of unity, nothing can harm you. So the whole notion of harm is part of the frequency of separation. And so we talked about it in a number of different ways. And it says, what if everything is truly happening as a doorway to your expansion? What if this is the universal intelligence, by whatever name, speaks to you, speaking to you, really, really speaking to you directly, and that, you know, I'm going to invite you to try something you haven't tried yet. Instead of you're telling me it's a noise, I'm telling you it's not a noise. I'm telling you it's a message. I'm telling you it's a doorway. I'm telling you it's the universe sing. It's reality singing to you. And this sounds crazy, but the person begin to go, wow, it's like even just thinking of it as a noise is some of the way I've polarized myself against this phenomenon. And yeah. So they went home, and I said, I have a practice for you. It's very, very simple. My invitation is you go home, and I'm serious about this. You sit with your journal, and that I promise you, you know, tell me later. Reflect this back to me. I promise you, this is the reality of life singing to you in a magical and benevolent way. And the person says, okay, I'm open to that being true. And so we drop the whole projection of noise, the whole projection of harm that goes with the story of noise and my sensitive nervous system and stuff. And the person goes home. I says, so I invite you to do a session a day, and let's start with 5 minutes a day where you're just going to listen quietly. But you're going to listen. You're not going to try to get rid of it. The opposite. You're going to go and sit in the noise, in the very center of that sound that is not noise, but it's a message from the universe singing to you, and listen with your whole being. And so she left super excited to do it. And the second day she arrived home. And the first day that she was home, she says, I'm up for it. I'm going to go and try it. And she goes to this part of the house where the noise is usually particularly loud. And for the first time ever, the noise isn't there. Gone. Finished. Over. And it's a simple example. And there's 1,000 examples like that. It's like... when you really meet the lion on your path, it disappears. And there's many, many kinds of lesson about how to be in unity. The lesson is one lesson with a myriad nuances, but it's something you get in your bones. It's something you get here in your deep in your being, in your feeling level, you know. And we've got all kinds of training about things that can harm us, and in some areas, and I'm speaking for myself, we categorize this training as knowledge, you know, and maybe we even hold that knowledge in a cherishing way. We've taught it to others. I mean, I speak for myself. I've learned lots of things about health and health food and all kinds of stuff that I've had to unwind and unlearn in a context of unity. So it served me for a time, and at some other time you start to hold on a second. If when reality is really consciousness, when that's actually the real, you can't be harmed really, really ultimately except by what you're holding in mind as harmful. And that sounds crazy to conventional thinking, to conventional separate self thinking. That sounds crazy. So I wouldn't advertise it as a philosophy, but as a practice that you discover the truth of in your own life. It's electrifying, you know. I like to say that if the arrow that is coming towards you, meaning someone's thoughts or energy or words that are attempting to harm you, if you bless it completely, it hits you as a feather. And as a philosopher, that's poetic, that's cute, but try it. You try it with all your heart and watch the magic happen. then you're like, wow, that this whole notion that I'm inside this body, reality's happening out there, and that the big choices that are dominating my life experience are in the hands of others. It's a shock when the system starts to discover the radicality of the whole game being 100% in here. It means the whole power for the mastery of this game is 100% in here. And that brings joy once you start to get the hang of the game, because you're like I'm getting the hang of this. This is fun. This is that life isn't against me. I'm not limited by my background, the color of my skin, my age, where I went to school, who my parents were, how much money I have, like zero. There's no limits in any direction except the limits you believe in. Because everyone has access to unlimited consciousness, unlimited source intelligence. And the game is simply to shed the beliefs that we don't have that access, and the ways we're vibrationally operating, playing small, pretending to be little, playing victim, believing in not having the capacity that we innately do.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm wondering, as we come to the kind of close of our conversation, and I know in a way, like, your whole conversation has been an invitation into this way of seeing, and you're beautifully articulating in this last example. Something's sinking in for me more deeply, like because it's like
you, what's landing for you?
It's like It's like what you're saying, like the on a that the principle, the universal principleness of it, and how it's not discriminatory to different things. It's just applying to everything in your life. So this tendency in big and small ways to see from a view of separation and subtly make things wrong.
Correct.
Or imbue things with a sense of harm
Correct.
through perception. And so you're kind of energetically anointing these things in in their own
Brilliantly.
way. And so
And
what's like,
creating them, energetically creating them that way.
right. And so I, in a sense, like a what's dropping in is like that on a radical level a bit more, I'm just like, whoa, okay. Like, so this little niggle here, like, how have I been holding that, And so I mean, and in a way, my question was like, I wonder if there's an invitation or a practice. And I know your whole, in a way, you've been saying like, don't, let's not look for like, prescribed lists of things to do, but what do you invite listeners into something like you did with this lady, where like think of an experience in your life and just practice blessing this experience in some way? I wonder if there's, yeah.
Sure. So, there's a few things to say to that. What I have noticed is that for myself principally is that the ignorance and illusion by which we hold veils over reality and keep ourselves separate from being in harmony with the magic, that these veils are habitual ways of thinking, habits of perception. And so I have been called in my own process of walking with others and supporting others in their illumination and liberation to really embark on this as a journey, because tidbits of insight here and there and tips for manifesting are fine and beautiful, but the game is a vibrational transformation, and that happens through a soaking process. And the paradox is, the mind thinks this stuff is hard. The mind, because we associate learning with school. And for most of us, school wasn't terribly joyful. I mean, it was learning boring stuff you don't have much interest in from people that are not very inspiring and themselves not very joyful and don't make the subjects come alive in any particularly uplifting way. So, an obligation and passing tests, this like it's drudgery and
When you put it
obligation.
like that, it just seems kind of crazy, doesn't it? Yeah.
So then some of that is the framework, the vibrational baggage through which we come to learning something new. It's like, oh, I have to learn a bunch of new stuff to solve these problems. No, it's not that. It's an adventure. It's a heroic, magnificent, fun adventure. And the adventure leads to becoming fascinated with actually with reality, with mastery of reality. And you get It's not that you have to do more. It's not that at all. It's that you start a world starts to open for you that you didn't know was here. A way to be with your own reality that leads to empowerment and possibility and creative aliveness and being able to bring forth it, creative inspiration and unwind difficulties and lack and limitation that you didn't believe could be unwound before, and unwind traumas that all your psychological work hasn't done yet. And that creates a feeling of literally anything is possible. And to have the certainty of grace, the certainty of, you could say, the grace of reality, just through discovery, that certainty is a true hope. You see, it's not the hope with a small H that, you know, in the next election, the right guys are going to get in, and the wrong people will be out of office at last, and those people over there are going to make better decisions for us. It's not that hope. The hope that things are going to get better in other people's hands, or that the economy or that the environment is going to change in a better direction. It's the real hope with a capital H that the keys to coming into alignment with the miracle field, with the magic, are 100% here, and I'm getting my hands on those keys now, and that's a wow, you see, and that brings a joy that there's no replacement for. It's not the joy of the stock market's going my way this week, you know, the deal I wanted to come through has come through. It's a joy of, I know there's more to see, I know there's more to unwind, but I'm in the arena. I'm in the field of how this game's working, and wow, you know, and I know how to call on the intelligence of life that responds to me unfailingly, and in extraordinary ways, unexpected ways, and so that's a long way of responding to. Sure, there's some invitations to join us, and I every month I have a free 2.5-hour event where I do initiation through crystal bowls and all kinds of stuff that's really, really fun and joyful, and respond to people's questions, and they're on my website, and anyone can join, and people can invite their friends, and it's free, and there's lots and lots of free material on my website, but the invitation is to an adventure. You know, the heart doesn't want to live inside rules, and actually doesn't want to be told what to do either, and doesn't want to follow anyone else's path either. The heart wants freedom and empowerment and adventure, and it's got to be fun. It's got to be joyful. Otherwise, in the end, the heart will go, no thanks. The heart will rebel. Too much serious learning. The heart won't have it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Patrick. Yeah. And you mentioned you've got these sessions on. And do you want to point people anywhere else as well?
Well, I'd say that the current range of offerings that we have today, I mean, I hold retreats every few months in wonderful, beautiful locations. I'm going to be in my home in California at the end of August for 5 days. I'm holding a 7-day retreat in Mexico in the middle of October. I'm going to be in London for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, 30th of November, 1st of December. And then I'm holding the annual event in South India, a 9-day retreat in South India between the 5th of January and the 13th of January. And each month in between, I'm holding these 2.5-hour open sessions and initiations. And I'm exploring all kinds of other ways to make these offerings more available. And the live offerings more available.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much for today. And I feel, you know, just your whole being has been an invitation into, yeah, this way of seeing, and yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, dear brother. Just such a joy to share this with you. Thank you for your deep questions. I've hogged the microphone today, and I'm aware of just the depth of your questions that's been such an invitation to share. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us, so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscience of change to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th.
Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.